Hey guys, this is Marcos again from Death Angel, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hi, this is Ted Aguilar from Death Angel, and you're listening to Iron City Rocks.
Hello and welcome to episode 566 of the Iron City Rocks podcast. I am your host, John, coming to you from the Iron City of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bringing you the best rock, hard rock, heavy metal, and blues talk on the net. Episode 566, we have two very special guests both joining us for the first time. In just a little while, we're going to have a man who, his name probably will ring a bell. He was a guitarist of Generation X, which was Billy Idol's band back in the late 70s. Derwood Andrews is going to join us to talk about his band Shag Barn. And right off the top, we're going to talk to Mark Osegueda of Death Angel. Death Angel will be rolling into town on December 3rd to do a show at Mr. Small's. And on that show, very special performance of their 1990 major label debut, album Act 3. They're going to be also performing on them with Violence, Lions at the Gate, and Misfire on that night, so it's going to be just an incredible night of metal at Mr. Small's. That's an Opus One show. So we're going to play you the new single from the band Death Angel. This is called Cult of the Used. Then we're going to get into the interview with Mark Osegueda. right, ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome from Death Angel. We have Mark on the line. How are you doing today, Mark?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. Yeah.
It is a pleasure to have you here. You guys are going to be coming into town on December 3rd to play a show at Mr. Small's. No stranger to that venue. But this time you're coming in with a kind of a special mission. You're going to be doing Act 3 in its entirety, but you've also got some new music out. And I want to start there. Cult of the Used dropped, had a chance to listen to that and the other single. What can you tell us as far as, the next full album? Because you guys are, you're always going to be an album band.
Oh yeah, we're definitely an album band for sure.
So when do we anticipate getting the full thing? Because that really, really whets the appetite.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, but we're writing. We're definitely
Okay.
writing, so we released what Wrathbringing Fire a couple months ago or a few months ago.
Right.
And then now Cult of the Used, and we still have some more songs recorded, but we're currently writing even more. So we just have no plans of jumping in the studio to record the whole full length just yet, but we are currently writing to have that. We have quite a bit of material, so we're going to start
Yeah.
narrowing it down and doing some more demos of that stuff, and then we'll get in the studio. But it's still going to be a bit, but we're definitely writing, and it's happening. We're in the process of making it happen for sure.
Now, I know you guys have played Wrath, Bring Fire before. Will you be playing the new song in the set, or you're still kind of ironing it out? I know you're a week or so out before you guys actually hit the road.
Well, we've been rehearsing quite a bit, so the set sounded great. So yeah, I think it's definitely going to see the light of day on this tour. The new song "Cult of the
Awesome.
Used" for sure. Yeah.
Awesome. And it the cool thing is, it doesn't it doesn't there's no curveballs. It's exactly what you'd expect, exactly what your fans have come to love from your music. But let's take it to Act 3, which is this is an anniversary for it. It was an album, the big major label record from you guys. Can you talk a little bit about what that experience was like? Because I think a lot of people assume, you guys were signed to Geffen Records, Guns N' Roses was on Geffen Records, Whitesnake was on
Yeah.
Geffen Records. You guys were millionaires. We know the reality. I think, it was
Exactly.
limousines and groupies
Yeah, and I
and
pissed all my millions away. No.
yeah. Can you talk? I mean, obviously there was the accident, which was really, I don't want to say bad time, but and when's a good time to have that kind of thing? But it really kind of derailed you guys in a lot of ways. But can you talk a little bit about what you remember about that period of time before the accident?
Oh yeah, I mean, it was a big deal when we got signed to Geffen, and it was the first time that we had a major budget to record a proper album back then. Say Ultraviolence was our first record, but that was recorded and mixed in like recorded in 3 days and mixed in five, whereas Brought to the Park was something like recorded and mixed in 2 weeks. And that those were on Enigma. And then when we got picked up by Geffen, next thing we had this major budget, and then we booked a studio down in Southern California because we recorded everything prior to that up in Northern California here, and we had the budget to work with a different producer. So and Max Norman was interested, and to us that's just mind-blowing because he's recorded Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman, and all of a sudden he wants to work with us, and we jumped on that train, and we had the budget to do it, and we worked in the studio with him for gosh, I believe we were down there for at least a month in the studio. And prior to that, he came up here for a good week of pre-production with us, and it was just like no work environment we'd ever experienced up to that point, in our career. And he pushed us beyond belief. And it was, in that regard, it was wonderful having that budget. In a sense, I guess the odd thing was when we put it out, Geffen really didn't know how to market a thrash band at the time. So they even hired a PR firm outside of their PR firm to help market us and whatnot. But we toured, headline for that whole tour, and it was us and Forbidden. We did North America, I believe, a couple times, and Europe a couple times, and that's when the accident happened, which things were going great, but then it just kind of derailed us. And I had a lot of Getting signed to Geffen was great, but we had some legal issues getting off of Enigma and onto Geffen, and it
Right.
didn't help that we signed a bunch of things when we were very young that we probably shouldn't
Yeah.
have. And so a lot of our time at this point, other than the touring, which was great, was taken up in litigation and whatnot. So that was a lot to deal with when we were, teenagers, and it just kind of that was the ugly side of it. And then when we got into the accident, that kind of, to me, I took it as a sign of like, I don't know, this industry is not what I dreamed it to be.
Yeah.
Being a kid who always wanted to play music my whole life, and that was my dream. And then my dream came true. And then the harsh reality of what the ugly side of the music industry was really kind of took it out of me. And I kind of decided that I had enough after the accident and took it as a sign. And the guys,
Yeah.
they too were just kind of like, they don't want to carry on Death Angel without me. And they just, went on, formed another band, and I just kind of took some time off to figure out who I was outside of Death Angel.
Yeah. And that is commendable to be able to do that. I mean, it, and I think you said something that really struck with me because talked to hundreds of musicians who have gone through, as you're talking about all that time with Max and him coming there, and I'm thinking that is just running up the bill. This is, you guys are gonna have to pay all this money back. It sounds great when you're 18 and you sign this, and they promise you the sun, moon, and stars, and then you start realizing that you're an indentured servant in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
Was the decision to walk away, was it, were you guys able to kind of get out of that without having to go into like personal financial hardship to do that? Because that, I mean, I imagine, that may
Well,
not have been an easy thing to do.
it was not an easy thing to do. You all of a sudden you're rediscovering life outside of music, at least for me,
Yeah.
and sure, I had to take, that all of a sudden I wasn't doing music and I was working jobs. I
Yeah.
didn't, people did think, wow, they have videos and they're touring in a bus and they're on
Yeah.
Geffen, so they're sitting on a pile of money, but that was
Yeah.
definitely not the case,
No.
So
Yeah.
yeah, I just started taking odd jobs here and there, and that's kind of what we did. And then Death Angel restarted eventually, 11 years later for the Chuck Billy benefit when he was diagnosed with cancer. And then we just kind of never looked back. It was great, and Death Angel's been going ever since. But in that time, I had jobs for sure. And right now, I've been pretty fortunate that I am a professional musician now, and
Yeah.
that's kind of fortunate enough to that's what I do. So as far as a extravagant lifestyle, I wouldn't call my life that, but it's I'm happy.
Yeah, and that's the key. I mean, the key is to be able to be happy doing it. When you came back and you guys decided to, kind of pick up from where you left off, it's the 2000s, the music scene had changed dramatically. The idea of physical products, this is some gonna guess time-wise show my age. This was around the Napster fiasco. So you were probably more of a touring entity at that point as opposed to, pushing product at Kmart.
Absolutely.
Did you guys feel like in that time away you kind of learned maybe more about the business and how to protect yourselves?
Well, absolutely. I mean, because then, once you start doing music again too, and you're getting older, so you're just getting wiser and you
Yeah.
get more experience, and you do see. And then we were there and signed, and when we reformed, we got signed again in like 2004, I believe, to Nuclear Blast, and we saw already how much the industry had changed. But even then, there was still physical product again,
Yeah.
especially in the metal scene, which was good.
Yeah.
But then even now, so we got to see that, and how it's evolved since then even is crazy. And
Yeah.
now it definitely is, about downloading music. People just the younger generation, that's what they're used to. And but we are
Yeah.
fortunate enough that we do play metal. And one thing about metal is metal fans still do like physical product. They
Yeah.
do. So, and they a lot of them like going to the record stores. So, and for those who don't, they also still like buying physical product at the shows and whatnot. So
Yeah,
it's
which is,
great.
yeah, it is. And you guys are not a, you're not a casual, I wouldn't say a casual listen. It wasn't like, oh, I remember that one power ballad from Death Angel, and you know, you know, so it, you know, I don't think you probably had a lot of, call it, casual fans who, you know, just came on because it was something to do. I think people that are into Death Angel are into Death Angel, which is a great thing to be. You're kind of a, you know, you're not burdened. I don't want to say burdened by a hit song, but in a way, you're not. You know, you're not the flavor of the month. When the opportunity came to work with Carey, on his record, was that, aside from scheduling conflicts, did you have to give that one much thought, or was that just like, yeah, that sounds awesome?
I mean, I love working with Carey, and I love being in that band. It's a blast. I love all the guys. It's been a great experience. It sure has. Now, when the opportunity presented itself, you know, it presented itself in an odd way, as so much I, you know, also sought it. You know, I did. I sought it. And because I kind of caught wind at one of these NAMM conferences. I was somewhere, you know, it was at one of the NAMM conventions. And at this particular one, a couple people just approached me, and I don't know, they were in the industry. I had no idea. And I was down there performing with Metal Allegiance, and a couple, it was at the after parties at the hotel or whatnot, and a couple of different people from different circles came up to me that particular year and said, you know, Carey's thinking about, you're one of the people Carey's considering for, you know, his new project. I said, you know, that's kind of, it kind of took me aback. I'm like, really? Because I'm friends with Carey, you know, and it was never mentioned to me. And then it started getting a little mouse in my head running. And then I kind of started really thinking about it. And this was during the pandemic now, after like a few months had gone by and the pandemic was happening. I started just really thinking about it, and just kind of, I approached a few people of mine that are, you know, heavy hitters in the music industry as far as musicians and, you know, some management companies. And I said, hey, this is just, you know, I'm just throwing this out there. What would you think if I was approached by Carey? Do you think I should do it? And these are people that are far more successful than me in music, than many people in music. And they were like, you'd be a fool not to. So when I kind of heard that, I kind of, you know, that's when it kind of hit me. And I just, I, you know, as I said, me and Carey are friends. So I just kind of texted him and just said, hey, man, I know you're putting something together, and I just want to throw my hat in the ring. And I go, or rather, my throat in the ring. And his response was, I'd be lying if I hadn't thought about it. And I said, okay. So then me and him just started, he started sending me things, you know, music, just instrumental things, and then started sending me music and sheets of lyrics, and then like some guide vocal stuff. And then I started going down to Southern California and demoing things with him, you know, just privately. We didn't let anyone know we were doing this, and eventually ended up demoing what would become the whole first record. And then it just, but he never, you know, he already had the whole band picked out, except he kind of waited last minute before he finally said, you know, okay, you're the guy,
You to
you
make you
know.
sweat.
And when he finally did, you know, he said, you know, he pulled me aside and said, you know, this years late, a couple years later, he's just kind of, since I started the process, and he just kind of said, you know, if you want the gig, it's yours. And I just gave him a big hug. I'm like, fuck yeah, I do. So, and it's been great. It's been a great experience. And you know, I look forward to more to come with them too. You know, I just love playing music. As long as I'm busy playing music, I'm happy.
Yeah, the other thing, I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, from a Death Angel perspective, I think it helps raise the visibility. I mean, because Carey is kind of an iconic figure in metal, you know. So, you know, I
Absolutely.
think it you know, listen, I remember listening to that. I'm like, who's the singer? Oh yeah, that's Mark. And then it's like, I got to go back and listen to some Death Angel because this guy kills. I forgot how good this was. So it's a really,
Appreciate
I
it.
think it's a great thing. What was there trepidation on your part about approaching Tom's vocal work? Because you know, he's a little bit different of a singer than you are. Actually, I think he's honestly a different singer than anybody on earth. You know, his stuff is I gotta imagine, a little harder on the vocal cords than you, who are maybe a more pure singer than he is. Was that something you had to kind of work at?
Well, you know, I've always respected Tom, and I fucking, excuse my language, but I really admire his voice and always have. And so when I got the gig with Carrie, you know, we were mostly just working on the original material. And with that, you know, Carrie pretty much had what he wanted. And that was just, you know, he laid down a guy vocal and said, "This is what I want, just more aggressive." So I just, you know, went in there and gave it my all and made it very, very aggressive. So that came out. That's just me at my most aggressive, you know, I guess, delivery of anything. And then it's when it came to playing live, and that's when we throw in, you know, some Slayer songs. But with that, you know, I'm a Slayer fan, so I know these, it doesn't take me long to learn the song. So I just, you know, get up there and I do him justice. You know what I mean? I do Tom justice. That's the way I see it for sure. And I say that because justice needs to be done if you're going to sing him, because he's got such a unique voice, and I think a great voice. You know, and that's why I do my best to do him justice, and I think I do, you know.
No, I think absolutely from what I've heard. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to see you guys collectively, but from what I've seen, you know, on the millions of TikTok videos, etc. But yeah, I know, just listening to his voice, I've always thought, you know, like, I'm a fan too, but I know I could not do him justice. And a lot of mortals could not.
For sure.
So I certainly understand. That's cool. So, is it fun going back and doing all of Act Three? I must have you guys done the entire album before, or is this a
We have
first?
not done this entire record since it came out. So it's been 35 years since we played some of these songs. You know, we seemingly endless time has always been left in the set since we've reformed. But other than that, we've maybe touched Stop a few times and Ecstasy a few times, but nothing else really. Veil of Deception, I think we did. But other than that, you know, and those were just a handful of times. So there's some songs that haven't been played in 35 years. So going back and relearning them, it was harder on the musicians, to tell you the truth. You know, 'cause me, I just gotta remember the words, and as soon as I get that down, it's fine. But you know, they've been the guys, Rob and Will and Ted and Damien, have really been doing their homework on it, 'cause they want it to sound, you know, we want it to sound definitely like the record. If you know the record, it's really, you know, it means a lot to a lot of people. It does. And so we want to do it justice. And Will and Rob have been the ones really working hard at
Really
it as well.
woodshedding.
Just really woodshedding. And it's just, it's sounding great. You know, we've been rehe I we rehearsed a couple days ago, and then got rehearsal again tomorrow. So it's the people that love that record, they're not going to be disappointed in any way. It's it,
Any
it yeah, it's.
plans for recording that show anywhere along the there? Does that come up, or is that something that you record them all, and then maybe if the recording's good enough, you consider releasing?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. There no solid plans have been, you know, made about that. Maybe, you know, somewhere down the line, doing a live video of a show, maybe, perhaps. But we'll see. We'll see how it, you know, how the shows pan out.
Well, Mark, I want to thank you so much again. You're going to be in here the first week of December doing a show, Mr. Smalls, on December 3rd. And you've got Violence and Lions at the Gate, Misfire on the bill. Going to be a hell of a night of metal. And want to thank you so much. And hopefully we'll see you with Kerry King as well sometime
Oh
pretty soon.
yeah. Look forward. Always love playing Pittsburgh, so it's gonna be great.
Awesome. All right. I want to thank Mark Osegueda again. Death Angel will be at Mr. Smalls Theater on December 3rd. Tickets still available. We will have a link in the show notes. If you go to ironcityrocks.com and just go to episode 566, we will have a link where you can get those tickets. Should be, as I said, an amazing night of metal. So check that out. We're going to turn our attention now to a guitarist, Derwood Andrews, who was in the band Generation X. And among other bands, he was in a band called Empire and Westworld. So he has had quite a illustrious career in music, kind of came out of that punk scene. Generation X, obviously, was the band that spawned Billy Idol, who had some amazing hits. But he's doing something really that almost defies description. The music of his newest project, the band is called Shag Barn, and they are essentially paying homage to Moondog. So, and if you're not familiar, I think it maybe is best to let Durwood explain it to you and let your ears hear it. So we're going to play you a little bit of Shag Barn and get into that interview with Durwood Andrews. Ladies and gentlemen, my pleasure to welcome the Iron City Rocks we have on the line. Durwood Andrews, how you doing, Durwood?
I'm doing swell. How are you?
Very, very well. It is a pleasure to talk to you. I've been a fan of your music is almost as far back as I can remember. So it's great to get a chance to talk to you. And you've got a great new offering for the market with Shag Barn, which I think kind of spawned out of Moondog, for those who have followed your career, post-Generation X and Westworld and Empire, familiar with Moondog. But can you talk a little bit about how Shag Barn in itself came to be?
Very weird and something that I had to put a lot of faith and trust in because it was so odd. The internet can be a good friend, but can be a terrible enemy. And so I'm very cautious about that kind of thing. And I try and promote things that I do and myself, but it leaves a bit of a bad taste in my mouth because I'm a guitar player and a record maker. I'm not someone who wants to sit at a computer and big myself up and bang on about myself to anyone. I just do what I do. So I occasionally put up photographs and things that I think are interesting. And what happened was, I've always been a fan of Moondog, Louis, and I met him back in the mid-90s. I went to one of his shows in London and got myself backstage because I really wanted to say hi and, you know, thank you for all your inspiration. And so we had a short conversation, which was delicious because, I mean, his voice was like silk anyway. When he spoke, it was like, Morgan Freeman speaking or something. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
I told him that we were thinking, or we had got a recording band together called it Moondog. And he basically said, well, as long as you put another G on there, I'm fine with that. And someone took a photo of me and my friend Martin, who was part of our Moondog, the double G. And so I posted this photo, and you know, a few people were like, oh yeah, cool. Most people have never heard of Louis and know nothing about him, which is quite admirable really, because he's one of the most important musicians from America that I know of. So I put this photo up, and a gentleman, or I didn't know who this was, but Julian responded with, wow, what a great photograph. I am a Moondog devotee. So I took that seriously and I said, wow, cool. And I sent him a track that I had done years ago called Moondog Speaks, because at that concert, I had my little dictaphone with me and I was recording the concert for posterity. And I found that, like I said, his voice is so soothing and the things he said were so brilliant that I made a track called Moondog Speaks. And it's just him in between his songs talking about the next upcoming song and things, you know, political things and hopeful things. Right. And so I made a track and we put it on a B-side, not thinking anything more of it. It was just mission accomplished, you know. And so I sent this track to Julian. I said, well, we actually made a track called Moondog Speaks. Give it a listen. He loved it, and he sent me a track that he just composed called Stride. And I sat there and I listened to it, and a whole world opened up to me. I just thought it was incredible. And the Moondog influence was so prevalent. But with Julian composing piano parts and stuff like that, it just blew me away. And I thought, you know what? I should put some lap steel guitar on this. It would really work nicely and it wouldn't interfere with what Julian had already done. So I did that and I sent it back to Julian, and I jumped ahead of time and I said, hopefully, I said, we should make an album. Because I still haven't lost my enthusiasm after 50 years for music.
Yeah.
And so he sent me 9 backing tracks of just him playing the trimba, Moondog's invented instrument. And yet again, I was blown away. And I just sat there for probably weeks just playing these tracks, which were, you know, 5 minutes long. And I just sit there and I started to hear things and I started to think of titles. And and it was, the process was just amazing. I hate to say it, but without sounding a bit pompous with my reference here, I've thought about it. Michelangelo, right? He said, I've read that he said, when he was doing these amazing carvings in marble, he said that the actual carvings were already in the marble, and all he was doing was chipping away at the residue, and eventually they came to life. And it was kind of like that. I had this block of trimba, and I just started chipping away at it with an open mind, and eventually these tracks started to come to life, and I would send them to Julian as I was getting further with them, and he would dig it and he would add vocals or more percussion and ideas and lyrics. And it took about 18 months. And I was pretty much in a trance for 18 months. I didn't get much else done. But eventually we ended up with this album. And I'm very proud of it because it was a spiritual reckoning for me.
Yeah, and it's you mentioned that, you know, the blessing and the curse of the internet, and I think everything you just said encapsulated it, because I'm sure you've, you know, in especially with your time with Generation X, you know, you were a known commodity in the music industry, so you probably get some people who reach out to you that just want something from you, as opposed to this with which kind of.
Yeah, a tiny bit. I'm not constrained by pandering to fans because I really don't have that many. My fans are my friends. I have a lot of friends. I correspond with people who dig what I do, but I don't pander to them, you know, which has left me free to do whatever enters my world.
I mean,
do you know what I mean? I don't have to rehash being a punk rocker. I don't have to reunite with old bands, and you know, because that's not what I set out to do. I believed very much in the punk DIY ethic because I was a 17-year-old kid. And I sucked all that in. I was like, this is new. This is great, you know. And it very quickly changed into a corporate fashion entity, which I felt completely left out of. I didn't want anything to do with that.
Yeah, and that's, in a way, I'm sure is incredibly liberating as a musician to be able to do what you said, you know, because we talk to musicians week after week who, you know, are to a degree, they have to play certain songs, you know, certain former band members that you were involved with, you know, would get run out of town if they didn't play certain songs every night. You have the freedom, you know, obviously there are financial repercussions to both decisions, and that's a different discussion altogether. But to hear somebody talk with the enthusiasm of what you and Julian did is rare. I mean, you know, you're able to completely submerge yourself into a project, you know, without worrying about, you know, an A&R guy and trying to sell it to a label and, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
It's got to be freeing.
Yeah. And the other side of that, to me, is if you do pander to what everyone wants, all you're doing as time goes on and you get older is you're diluting what you did originally. And you're in danger of becoming what you once hated. And to me, that is the worst end result of a career. And I can apply it to many, many, many people that I used to know who have become what they once hated. It's real sad, you know?
Yeah, I mean, especially coming up in the punk scene. I mean, you're exactly right. You know, you 50 years later, I mean, you're the opposite of what you hated, you know, of what you wanted to be. You know, and you mentioned the DIY. That's, you know, what you're doing now is so close in a way to what you were doing back, you know, with Generation X, with, you know, kind of a punk attitude and the DIY aspect of it. How much more DIY can you get than file sharing with a person you didn't meet because you both have a shared love of a musician that a lot of people don't know? I mean, that's got to be so enjoyable.
The key word there is love. You know, I love all kinds of music. I love all kinds of people that make relevant and out there music. And going back to the punk thing, you know, these people were once very creative and on top of everything. And now it seems like it's good enough just to relive your glory days and sell t-shirts and be adored by millions. See, that's, unfortunately, that's never been my MO. And success to me is finishing what you fucking started. That's as far as my success goes. And, you know, I'm very happy being a struggling musician, hopefully with a bit of class, you know?
Yeah. And you bring up something so important when you said about t-shirts, because that is, in a lot of respects, become the be all end all of what musicians produce. I was looking at an artist's website who I'd prefer not to mention, but not involved with your career at all, yesterday. And I was looking at their website, like the cheapest thing on this artist's website is their music. Like, that's sad.
Right. Yeah.
You know, the thing that they put their heart and soul in is $14.
All you do.
Well, I mean, in this case.
Yeah. I can think of a few people who have jumped over the hurdle of this. And I will name someone like Neil Young. Somebody who, when he first started, created the most beautiful songs recorded in the most beautiful way. But that didn't deter him from doing things that were just crazy and completely away from that. And he's lucky enough that he was successful enough to not only drag a few of his original fans with him, but he created new fans. And, you know, my hat goes off to Neil Young every day. Just what a great guy, you know?
Yeah, it's a freedom that unfortunately not many artists can enjoy, because I'm sure it's hard when you are financially successful as a musician to deviate from the formula that makes you successful as an artist financially. You know,
so you've got all these voices in your ear saying, "Hey, I want to put my kids through college. You know, do another one of those."
Just make the same record again, change it up a little. You know. Got tuition to pay.
And I mean, that's the way the world works, unfortunately. But if you listen, hopefully you've listened to Solid Gold Timepiece, but the lyrics that Julian came up with, and don't forget, I'm a 66-year-old guy. He's a 25-year-old kid. The lyrics that he came up with after a suggestion of a title from me are so wise for a young man, and so hopeful, and the message on this album is just a beautiful piece of music that lasts for, I think, 44 minutes, and it's got an order, it's got a message, and I was thinking the other day, sorry to keep waffling on, but I was thinking you probably know, you sound like a kind of wise, cool guy. We sent up, and you're from Pennsylvania, which goes a long way for me. I love PA. But I was thinking this gold record that we sent up into space on the, I think it was the Voyager in the 70s, which is now left our galaxy, and you know it's the furthest man-made object of all time, as far as we know. I was thinking that's why I came up with Solid Gold Timepiece, because that gold record floating out in the galaxies. What a wonderful thing to do! Whoever thought, what are we going to put? How are we going to introduce humanity to whoever finds this? And music being one of the greatest creations we've ever made out of thin air, it's just fantastic. So I was thinking about that. And also in my mind was the beautiful work of people in the 1800s that made amazing timepieces, you know, solid gold timepiece. How the hell did anyone make a pocket watch? I mean, I can't even see the time on a pocket watch.
Open up the back and look into it.
it's like, how did we do that? It's amazing. So the title came in a couple of ways, but it just made sense, you know. I wish Shagbarn was on that spacecraft, because it would be a good opposition to Johnny B. Goode, maybe.
certainly a different genre to a degree. Do you and Julian, you know, when you actually, you know, you were trading files back and forth, did you actually get together and did you demo it by file sharing, or was the actual completed album done that way? Did you each have studios you could kind of work out, or Pro Tools that you were able to put it together?
I would send him something, and the other beautiful thing to me is the people I used where I couldn't actually achieve the quality of what I wanted, you know, because there was one track, I think it was Cruising Ain't Look. Is it Cruising? No, Road to Oblivion. The second track, right? I could hear a flamenco guitar, but I can't play flamenco guitar. I could fake it, but I wanted someone to actually play what they do, a flamenco guitarist. And luckily for me, my close neighbor, another young man, a talented guy, is a flamenco guitarist, and I said, "Hey, would you come around and put some guitar on this?" And he's like, "Sure." You know, everyone who contributed it was just, sure, I'd love to. Money wasn't even mentioned. It was just, look, I'm doing something and I think it's going to be really good and I really need you to do this. Would you do it? And I'd send them files and I was just so, or, you know, with my flamenco guitarist, he just popped round and did it. And so I would send the finished piece back to Julian and for his approval, and he would add this and he, or, you know, the really good thing is we got all our ducks in a row when we started. We said, we agreed, look, this is going to be a 50-50 split all the way down. Whatever you put in will be appreciated and vice versa. But I do want to be the final say on the mixing, because otherwise, we did try it. Otherwise, it gets really complicated. If he sends me a final mix and I don't quite like it, you're just going to go back and forth and say, I think the snare drum should be a different sound, you know, blah, 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 blah. So we did get all this sorted out beforehand that it's going to be a 50-50 thing, but I'm going to end up doing the mixes and hopefully it's exactly what you hoped. And it worked out great, you know, 18 months
That sounds like a man who's been down this path a few times with mixing issues. And it, you know, it's probably good that you have a cohesive sound too, because if, you know, he did some on his end, you did some on his end, it was going to sound like you could end up with kind of a mess.
Exactly. You know, so we started with a mess. I didn't want to end up with a mess.
Sure. Now, do you guys, does this journey continue with you and Julian, or was this, did this have kind of a defined beginning and an end? Was the album the goal, or was that just the beginning?
The album is the goal. And we've discussed it. It's like, how the hell could we do this live? And I've always found that if you make a record, you owe it to anyone who likes that record. You owe it to them to sound as much like that record as you possibly can. And I've been through that a few times, and it's always been for instance, Westworld was built on machines. You know, we were using samplers and all that, and some people wanted to make it a live band, and I said, no, it has to be machines when we play live, which was pretty fucking risky in the late 80s. But we took Akai samplers on the road with us, and we would have to reload every couple of songs because of the memory. You know, there was hardly anything there.
Yeah, I'm thinking the stress involved with that, I can't imagine.
Oh, my God. I mean, if someone unplugged the sampler, we would be standing there with an electric guitar and an acoustic and a vocal. Thank God it never happened. But it would be a disaster. So every night was the thought of, let's be positive. Everything's going to be fine, you know.
You've got 10 copies of the floppy disks you needed.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And thank God we had someone who was a genius at doing all that behind us. And we, you know, when he was reloading, we'd have to run reel-to-reel tapes that we previously recorded that would take, you know, a couple of minutes, but still be entertaining, while the new discs were loading and we could carry on. So, so your question is, could we, you know,
do you anticipate another album, or do you guys continue to write together from here?
No, not at the moment. I don't think so. I think this is it. I don't think we could better it, and I don't see the reason why we would try. The one thing I would hope to come out live wise would be that I would love to actually meet Julian And I would love to actually play with him. But it would, I did a thing for like 10 years called Tone Poet. And it was when I discovered the lap steel guitar and minimal production. And I really enjoyed all of that. And I actually went on tour in Europe with it. And it worked out, to me, it worked out really well. What I would love to do with Julian is to pick a couple of Shagbarn tracks that we could unproduce, and a couple of Tone Poet tracks that we could upproduce, and have a cohesive set of like 8 or 9 songs and play those live, so that historically it made sense, and the people who like Tone Poet and Shagbarn would be satisfied. So I do see that maybe sometime next year.
Yeah, boy, I have to suggest getting something to record that show. Maybe you're the same one you used for Moondog. You could bring your dictaphone and record that, because it sounds like
an amazing.
That'd be kind of a fun way to do it. And everybody gets these massive recording, you know, mobile units to do, you know, this spotless reproduction and produce it in such a way it sounds better than it did live. You go back and do it with the dictaphone and give us the the punk rock version of the show. That would be really cool.
Sorry.
Go ahead. No, it's okay.
I was just going to say that, you know, now the technology is there that you could just throw up a digital stereo recorder and it would sound amazing.
Something about the cassette player in your boot has a nice warmth to it, though. If it's not good sound quality, it is. And many a show like that.
The kids are discovering the joy of cassettes and vinyl, you know. It's something you can actually own and touch and read, as opposed to, you know, someone putting something on your playlist that you didn't even ask for.
Yeah. Speaking of vinyl, the Shagbarn the album is available both CD and vinyl. So people can pick that up. I'll include the link on our show notes for this. Dorward, I want to thank you so much for letting us pick your brain for this last half hour. It's been an absolute pleasure and an honor to talk to you. And hopefully a lot of people get out of the same joy I had listening to it and you had making it. And Julian, obviously, you guys put your heart and soul into it. So want to get the word out. And thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you for appreciating it and understanding my thoughts on it. Yeah, thank you very much, John.
All right, I want to thank Durwood Andrews, the album Solid Gold Timepiece. We will have links in our show notes. Again, head over to IronCityRocks.com and go to episode 566. We'll have information on where you can pick that up and get all kind of information about Durwood. It was really cool to get a chance to talk to him, a man whose music has been in my life for a very, very long time, and I'm sure many of you as well. Also want to thank Marco Segeda. Again, Death Angel, December 3rd, going to be doing Act 3 in its entirety. If that's not enough to get you to the show, almost we don't know what to do with you. But also on the bill that night, Violence, Lions at the Gate, Misfire, a tremendous amount of metal. That is going to be on a Wednesday night. I don't know that you're going to be able to go to work on Thursday, but Wednesday night will sure be fun. So head over to Iron City Rocks. We'll have links to the tickets for that as well. Want to thank you guys. Drop us an email, ironcityrocks@gmail.com. Let us know, do you like the punk stuff? Do you like the really heavy metal stuff? Do you like lighter metal, hard rock, blues? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you guys what kind of stuff you're into. And we've got some really cool stuff on the horizon in the next couple episodes. It's going to go in some completely different directions, as you may have noticed with Iron City Rocks. Kind of no guardrails when it comes to the kind of music we cover. But we hope you enjoy it. And again, Death Angel, December 3rd, Durwood Andrews, Solid Gold Timepiece with Shagbarn, available now. So until next time, you can check us out on all the social medias, Iron City Rocks. I want to thank you so much for listening.